good morning, everybody. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am the lovely and talented Paul Molloy, and it is our Thursday edition, and we are absolutely berserk with delight that you're with us this morning, because we got a lot to talk about. In fact, in just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Brad Spangler. He is director, Center for a Stateless Society. The Center for a Stateless Society, new organization dedicated to what they call market anarchism. So stay tuned for that. Should be interesting. Also, as that Gulf oil spill moves closer to Florida, what about nuking it? Well, they're actually discussing the possibility. We're going to discuss it as well. So stay tuned for that. And the question of eminent domain, the right to keep your property or not, if the government wants to take it for commercial purposes. Well, it's an issue going on right now in New York City, and we're going to discuss it. And speaking of property, the Church of Scientology has bought Ybor Square right outside downtown Tampa. Now, how will that play out? Well, we'll discuss that as well. Meantime, this is Tampa Bay's only regular, ongoing, libertarian radio show, Freedom Works. We're here Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday to champion the concept, less government, especially less federal government in your life, but more importantly, more personal freedom, more personal responsibility. There is a place. There is a place for government. The question is, how much of a place is there? And that's what we're all about. We come to you, as I say, every day during the week except Wednesday, 10 to 11 Eastern Time on the Tantalk Network, also available worldwide from our website, thefreedomworks.com, thefreedomworks.com. You want to call us? Our toll-free number is 866-826-1340, 866-826-1340. We have a toll number as well, toll number, local number is really what it is, 727-441-3000. And finally, an email address if you want to send questions to us by rote, freedomworksemail@yahoo.com, freedomworksemail@yahoo.com. Well, as I say, a lot to talk about. And the biggest issue right now to Floridians is the creeping oil. And it is getting closer and closer. I'm looking at a story from the Palm Beach Post, and it talks about the panhandle, first part of our state that is in jeopardy, may get hit with oil from that oil spill. And what is it doing right now, of course, to tourism, and what is it doing to the quality of life, for that matter? Now, a charter boat captain reported the oil Tuesday afternoon, and at that point, it was about just under 10 miles offshore from Pensacola Beach area. Emergency crews had begun to scour the beaches for oil and shoring up miles of boom. Now, Escambia County up there in the panhandle will be using these shorings to block oil from reaching inland waterways. But how are they going to stop all of that stuff? Now, this is all coinciding with the panhandle's summer tourism season. As you know, it begins in early June. It normally brings millions of dollars to the region. It's really become worse and worse and worse, and there is a sense now of desperation in the whole problem. All of this started, of course, April 20th, when the Deepwater Horizon rig exploded. 11 lives were lost from that explosion. So the question is, what are they going to do? Well, how about nuking it? Got a story here from the New York Times. And armchair engineers had begun brainstorming for ways to stop this torrent of oil. And the question came about, what about actually nuking the well? Well, decades ago, the Soviet Union reportedly used nuclear blasting to successfully seal off runaway gas wells. They inserted a bomb deep underground, and they let its fiery heat melt the surrounding rock to shut off the flow. So the question is, why not try it here? And the idea has gained some fans. Now, yesterday, the latest rescue effort by BP and its group stalled because a wire saw that was being used to slice through the riser pipe got stuck. So here is Matt Simmons. He's a Houston energy expert and an investment banker. He says probably the only thing we can do is create a weapon system. Send it down 18,000 feet, detonate it, and hopefully we encase the oil. Or as CNN reporter John Roberts suggested last week, drill a hole, drop a nuke in, and seal up the well. Is that legitimate? Well, it's probably not going to be used. A little bit scary, don't you think? But that's really one of the many ideas. Another one, lowering giant plastic pillows to the seafloor. Excuse me for laughing. Fill them with oil, drop a huge block of concrete to squeeze off the flow, and then use magnetic clamps to attach pipes that would siphon off the leaking oil. Then there are others that suggest conventional weapons, conventional explosives, saying, well, oil prospectors on land use them all the time to put out fires and seal these boreholes. But oil engineers say, well, you dynamite down that deep, you risk destroying the wellhead so that the flow could never be plugged from the top. You know, I was listening the other day on, I think it was Fox News, might have been one of the other stations. BP's record of safety is absolutely disgraceful in comparison to some of the other companies like ExxonMobil. And in fact, BP is so far removed from their safety record that it's almost laughable. And my sense is that the whole company, after all of this is over, is going to become a bad verb. Well, they BP'd that thing, if you know what I'm saying. And I think BP may go out of business. I can tell you for sure that heads will roll. And at the very least, they're going to change their name. Because would you drive into a BP station right now and fill your tank? I'm looking at Big Eddie shaking his head. I wouldn't either. I'd be embarrassed to. In fact, if I was an employee of BP, I'd be worried about being at the facility. You know, the big BP sign as you drive by?
Yeah, and I guess there's going to be some protests this week.
Absolutely.
Their argument is the people that own these stations are not affiliated with BP.
No,
they just
not.
Buy their product.
Exactly. It's unfair.
Guess what? Buy another product.
And as I say, I think the whole thing, it's become an absolute public relations nightmare for BP. Not that this is what we should be worrying about. Of course we shouldn't be. It's the loss of life and the horrible destruction of the environment. But I think that's what's going to happen. I noticed that the CEO of BP, he happens to be British, made some sort of a faux pas, said that he'd like to get his life back from all of it. Well, it was a very tragic use of words when you've got, what, 11? Or was it 13 people that died from it?
11
people that died from it. Anyway, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with Brad Spangler for the Center for a Stateless Society.
Sugar.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
At the Oaks of Clearwater, we offer an exciting, independent lifestyle. It's the perfect combination of freedom, comfort, and security. Enjoy total independence with peace of mind. Our independent lifestyle includes chef-prepared meals in our beautiful waterfront dining room, a continental breakfast, all utilities, including cable and telephone, housekeeping with linen service, scheduled transportation, including trips to shopping, restaurants, local theater, and so much more. Our activities program is second to none. At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy an on-site wellness program, rehabilitation clinic, and home health services. We have security 24 hours a day, and each apartment is equipped with an emergency call response system, answered in-house by our caring, compassionate staff. At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy affordable luxury retirement living, all with a $1 million view of beautiful Clearwater Bay. Call us today at 727-445-4069 and let us welcome you to gracious retirement living, where caring, compassionate service makes the difference.
Hey, we're glad you're listening to Freedom Works. And if you like what you're hearing, there's something you can do to help keep us on the air. You can visit our website at thefreedomworks.com and make a contribution, anything from $20 on up, and it'll go directly to our program and our efforts to get out the libertarian message of less government in our lives and more personal freedom and responsibility. And while you're there at the website, you can find out more about libertarianism. You can also take a very short quiz to see where you fit in on the political spectrum. And you can find out more about people that have stood for libertarian principles like Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand. But please consider backing our show with a contribution. We even make it easy for you with a credit or debit card. And once again, that's thefreedomworks.com. And by the way, thanks for listening.
Money. It's the one thing everybody can't ever seem to have enough of. This Friday, Your Money Professors, Mike Van Horn Beck and Christian Biter from J.W. Cole Financial and Jonathan Roberts Advisory Group will explore the important financial issues and challenges that we all face daily. And of course, your money questions and comments are also welcome. Your Money Professors, enlightened financial sense in a senseless world. Fridays at 11 Eastern on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Tampa Bay's Tantalk, entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. So glad that you're with us, and we're delighted to have Brad Spangler join us. Brad is the director for the Center for a Stateless Society. Now, this is a project of the Molinari Institute, and it's dedicated to building public awareness and support for market anarchism. Brad, welcome to Freedom Works.
Good morning, Paul. Can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear, my friend. Thank you very much. Thanks very much for joining us, Brad. Now tell us, what is the organization, the Center for a Stateless Society, all about?
Well, real briefly, we're a market anarchist media center, meaning that we basically are working on putting out there a stream, so to speak, of news commentary, analysis, and research from a market anarchist perspective, trying to change the public discourse in this country and make the public aware that there are a set of ideas or family of ideas out there that basically say we'd be a lot better off with no government at all, and we're capable of having a peaceful, free, prosperous, and in fact lawful and orderly society without government as we understand it today.
You said no government at all? In other words, no federal government, no state government, no local government?
Well, no government in the sense of a coercive political state. Now, obviously, the word governing can be used in different ways, such as, for instance, you know, old-fashioned steam engines used to have a governor on them, or your local garden club as a voluntary association might have a governing charter, or your homeowners association might have elections and rules about how it governs itself as a voluntary association. But anarchists oppose rule by others. That's the roots of the word and for no, and arch as in ruler. So anarchy doesn't necessarily mean no rules. It means no rulers. We can build a system of law and social organization by mutual consensual agreements among people and self-organized without a violence being used to impose an order from the top down.
Okay. Now, it all sounds very nice that we have, you know, camaraderie and you don't harm everybody else. But the truth is, the human condition is that those things do occur. And there is violence. And
right.
So we set up, at least if you look at our Constitution for the United States, a set of rules that would basically allow people, if you go back to the Constitution, as much freedom as possible. But when they harm somebody else, that there is some sort of a governing body that comes between the person harmed and the person that did the harm, and some sense of, I don't know if you want to call it justice or repatriation or whatever it is to right the wrong. Now, are you against that idea?
Well, I'm not against justice. However, the coercive political state is essentially the monopolization of justice and the use of that monopolization to serve as a fig leaf for systematized injustice by the state itself. That's how politics works historically, all across the board, without exception. Now, there are different instances where this has been more the case than others. Obviously, some countries are more or less free than others, but the one common thing about the political state is that it's a system of rulership that's ultimately going to be for the benefit of an elite that control the means of compulsion.
Okay. Let me ask.
The thing is that justice is something that we want. It's something that is basically something that everybody wants for themselves. And if you're a good person, at least, you also want it for others. But, you know, that's less of a concern. Everybody at least wants primarily to take care of making sure that they don't get victimized, so to speak. That's a natural human compulsion. It's a natural worry. Would you agree?
Yes, I certainly would agree. Again, we're talking with Brad Spangler. He is director for the Center for a Stateless Society. Brad, these are great in theory, but let's go to some reality. The United States, what if it's attacked? What if some other group infiltrates and attacks this country, doing harm and damage? If you don't have a federal government, as an example, to defend our borders, you know, to provide for a common defense of the country. I mean, how do you handle something like that?
Well, how it would be handled is basically going to be a matter of how people can organize to provide the service of defense. And the thing is that doing it by means of threatening people, by means of imposing a tax, whether someone wants to pay it or not, or by means of ordering people about that don't necessarily want to follow your orders, actually is an impediment to efficient organization. If people want to defend this country, then they will defend it, in fact. I don't want to offend a great many people here, but there have been instances where a large country has been occupying a smaller country militarily, and the people of that country, without benefit of, so to speak, benefit anyway, of government, have largely been something that has really been a drain on the resources of the imperial power, and it's ultimately unworkable. What I'm saying is that there's nothing that can be done via death threats as a mode of social organization, which is what government is, that can't be done on a voluntary contractual basis.
But again, I mean, if some other country, and I'm just using the United States, of course, here theoretically, we decide that we're going to get rid of our government, our federal government, and our state and local governments, all of a sudden people just cross into our border from all points, even worse than perhaps they're doing now, infiltrate, bad people infiltrate, or a country attacks with weaponry from the air, no matter whom it is, and yet we don't have any centralized means of defense. How is that going to work?
Well, the question is, there's a difference between recognizing that a service is necessary versus the assumption that that service has to have a centralized monopoly provider. I mean, for example, we have to eat on a daily basis, by and large. I mean, you could perhaps go as long as, say, a month or so without food before you would ultimately be looking at truly starving to death in most cases. But, you know, that doesn't mean that we have to have a government monopoly of food growing and distribution and processing. It's something that the market can provide. There's nothing that people value that they wouldn't be willing to pay for. And because of that, you can have a multiplicity of providers that are able to work together, potentially.
Well, food is one thing. Being attacked by another group of people is quite another. I can understand, you know, co-ops and all kinds of things for food and getting the government out of that. I tend to agree with you. But I can't see the argument for defending your country and borders from, say, a nuclear attack or any kind of an attack. Now, I guess the best argument that could be made is voluntary armies that might be set up by local geographical areas that, you know, you might be able to say could work. But even there, the reality of the situation is that you need some sort of unified defense to oversee. I mean, to me, you know, the primary job of government, its most important task of federal government is to provide for the common defense of the country. I think if you can provide for the common defense of the country, everything else could probably, I could go along with you on the rest to some extent. But I can't get past this concept of no government whatsoever, and then the people of this region or land or whatever you want to call it here that we call North America being attacked. There is where I don't know that your argument holds up.
Well, on what basis do you say that? Because, again, what I'm pointing out is that it's a service. It's something that people value. There's no actual compelling argument that it has to be a monopoly, that there has to be a monopoly service provider. Admittedly, an alien idea for many people, but that's simply because...
Yeah, but how do you protect the country? If you don't have a federal government to oversee the defense of the country, how do you protect the citizenry?
What are you protecting it from? Are you protecting it from an airstrike?
Protecting it from either an airstrike or an infiltration with nuclear weapons, whatever. In this day and age, we are all concerned about such things as the attack, of course, 9/11.
Right.
Attempted attacks that have occurred since then. I mean, what's to prevent that if you don't have any kind of common defense of the country?
I'm not arguing against a common defense. I'm arguing against the common defense being provided as a monopoly service.
A monopoly.
In other words, there's nothing that we're talking about as far as the actual tasks of defense, the actual nuts and bolts of providing defense as a service that requires that it be done by the government as a monopoly. If you want to have, say, an air defense missile system to provide for defense of a metropolitan area, for example, missile strikes or what have you, then that's something that people can chip in together and actually pay money for, raise money for, however, perhaps on a nonprofit basis or on a fee-for-service basis, and actually acquire the weapons and hire the people to man them.
Well,
I
think you have an interesting theory, Brad. We have a caller, Tom from St. Louis, that would like to weigh in on it. Tom, welcome to Freedom Works. Do you have a question or a comment for Brad?
Well, yes, actually, I had a comment for you, Paul. You're talking about the necessity of a unified command for defense. If you look at history, the freest countries, the most decentralized countries, are the hardest to conquer. And one without a unified government has nobody to surrender. In World War II, Yamamoto cautioned the Japanese high command against an invasion of the United States because he said there would be a rifle behind every blade of grass. Hitler didn't invade Switzerland because he knew there was a machine gun in every home, that there wasn't a centralized command providing for the defense, that it was being provided for generally, and that, you know, no matter who, you know, what unit they defeated, there was nobody that could say, okay, we surrender, it's over, you've won.
Well, I don't see the reality of not having a federal government that oversees the defense of a country or a group of people in a democracy. Now, the people themselves elect the legislators to kind of enforce that. You're calling for the demise of the federal government. I mean, you know, we can talk theory forever, but the reality is that you're just, I don't see how you're ever going to get to that point. So let's go on to another topic of your society and some of the other areas, perhaps that you feel we don't need a federal government. For instance, how about just a system of courts? How would you deal with we talked a little bit about it, but
sure.
somebody gets injured. Do you just have the two of them work it out somehow to mutual satisfaction? But what if one of them feels that they're not being properly compensated for whatever the injury is? You know what I mean?
Okay. Real briefly, like I mentioned, everybody has an interest in justice, and there's also a common interest in providing for justice. However, people are going to recognize that to varying degrees and also disagree about the specifics of it in many cases. But this can be handled by providing the service with a multiple amount of providers, by a free market or an open market in the provision of the service. What you're really talking about when you're talking about courts is you're talking about dispute resolution. It's a service. So mm-hmm. obviously if people are disagreeing about something and it's a matter of someone being injured, suffering damages in some way, suffering what they call in the legal world a tort, so to speak, then it's a dispute that requires arbitration. And
well, arbitration, that's what I was going to get to. You're going to still have to set up some sort of an arbitration panel. Now, you can call it an arbitration panel, or you can call it a system of judges, a court system, whatever you would like to call it. But ultimately, you're going to have a third party mediate. Now,
absolutely.
So the court
The thing is, though, that party does not have to be a monopoly. In fact, what I argue for is that you're going to achieve more efficient and more just decisions across the board by allowing consumer choice to allow the market to select the best arbitrators, the best justice. In other words, judges are appointed in large part nowadays as a political thing. And politics is a terrible means of picking anything, okay? If you want someone who is going to be a recognized expert in really getting to the heart of a matter where the issues are difficult to figure out, then what's going to happen is someone who has developed a track record of figuring out, who is the real victim, how much damage have they suffered, they're going to essentially rise to the top in a market characterized by open competition for the service of arbitration.
Well, I think you can go along with that concept, and I think it could work. But ultimately, the human condition is such that even if you completely got rid of government, you are going to have groups of people recreating it on a local level. And then on the local level, it will expand itself to a regional level and all and on and on and on. It's just the way things. I mean, if you just started from ground zero, that's what would happen. It's been the human condition to form whatever you want to call it, organizations or groups, which become
right. and
political.
And I'm not against organizations.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that coercively imposing organization is something that we can do without.
Well, yeah.
But you're
going to still have organizations electing a leader or a representative. And from there, that person starts to have to make certain decisions. It's just a mini government, really. I just think that ultimately...
Well, that's why I tried to make the distinction earlier between governing in the sense of organization and administration versus ruling in the sense of imposing a decision non-consensually.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, it's very interesting, Brett. I think you still got to work on this thing about the common defense. I don't hear a real answer for you in protecting a group of people from attack from without. But I want to thank you very much for coming on here. And if people want to find out more about yourself and the Center for a Stateless Society, Brad, what can they do?
They can visit us on the web at c4ss.org. That's C as in Charlie, the number 4, S as in Sierra, S as in Sierra, .org.
Okay, c4ss.org. www.freedomworks.ss.org. Well, Brad, thank you very, very much for coming on and talking with us today. We wish you the very best.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you for having me on.
Our pleasure. Brad Spangler, Center for a Stateless Society. Well, we're going to take a short break, my friends. Don't go away. We got lots more to talk about.
Mustang Sally. Guess you better slow the Mustang down.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
So, you think all water parks are created equal? Think again. Only one Orlando water park is built to give you that high-octane double-shot adrenaline rush, and that's Wet n' Wild, where it's all about the thrills. Bigger, higher, faster, with more multi-person thrill rides than any other water park around. Where else but Wet n' Wild can you experience the mind-numbing buzz of Brainwash, the hyptronic groove of the Disco H2O, or the cosmic rush of the Black Hole, the Next Generation? Right now at Wet n' Wild, Florida residents can get a full day of pulse-pounding thrills for just $32 plus tax with a valid Florida ID. So if you're looking for pure exhilaration, look no further than the park named by the Travel Channel as one of America's most extreme water parks. Wet n' Wild, in Orlando, or on the web at wetandwildorlando.com.
Hey, we're glad you're listening to Freedom Works. And if you like what you're hearing, there's something you can do to help keep us on the air. You can visit our website at thefreedomworks.com and make a contribution, anything from $20 on up, and it'll go directly to our program and our efforts to get out the libertarian message of less government in our lives and more personal freedom and responsibility. And while you're there at the website, you can find out more about libertarianism. You can also take a very short quiz to see where you fit in on the political spectrum. And you can find out more about people that have stood for libertarian principles like Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand. But please consider backing our show with a contribution. We even make it easy for you with a credit or debit card. And once again, that's thefreedomworks.com. And by the way, thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Ken from Dining Out Radio. Are you tired of going to the same old restaurants? Why not listen to Dining Out Radio and we'll tell you some of the best restaurants in the Tampa Bay area. We'll have chefs on talking about their favorite dishes. We'll have wine people on talking about the greatest wines. We'll have a lot of guests on there and we might even throw in a couple of surprises. Heard every Wednesday, 1 to 2 p.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network. You can go to our website, diningoutradio.com. Dining Out Radio brought to you by Watercolors Steakhouse and Grill.
Tampa Bay's Tantalk, entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
Mustang Sally.
Hey, we're back. And just in, the Coast Guard reports that British Petroleum has been successful at slicing that oil pipe, cutting it. So maybe this is good news. They say the next step is installing a cap over the pipe. Now, they were using a diamond cutter because they wanted to make as fine a cut as they could. The doggone thing got stuck in the midst of making the cut. Then they were able to apparently extricate it. They put it back in there, and they finished the cut. So now they want to try and install this cap and see if that will do it. There's a live shot here. If you go to Fox News and go to their front page on foxnews.com, you can see the live stream now. You can go to the link that shows the work that they're trying to do on that. In the meantime, Vice President Joe Biden is backing Israel's right to board ships that go to Gaza to prevent weapons smuggling. He came out and talked about it yesterday, saying also that the government, U.S., remains concerned about the plight of Palestinians there. Now, as you know, Israeli commandos boarded a flotilla of six aid vessels trying to break Israel's blockade of the Gaza Strip. This blockade has been in effect for 3 years. And the blockade has siphoned off a lot of supplies that would otherwise get to the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. During entry onto one of the six ships, Israeli commandos were attacked. You can see it on a video. They were immediately attacked. People wielding lead pipes and all kinds of other things. The problem with that is that the commandos had guns, and 9 activists were killed in the confrontation, dozens injured. So now the U.S. has been walking a fine line on this situation, been very careful in its response. Turkey is absolutely enraged, and Turkey has been a friend to some extent in the Mideast, a calming effect country regarding all of the tensions between Israel and its neighbors. But now Turkey is up in arms because there were Turkish citizens on these flotillas. So here is Joe Biden. He was on the PBS program Charlie Rose. He says Israel has an absolute right to deal with its security interest. And he reiterated the Obama and the Obama administration's support for a transparent, impartial investigation of what happened. That is a very delicate situation. And right now there is world outrage, quite frankly, at Israel. Well, here's a story that won't go away. And the Obama administration very much wishes that it would. The White House is facing fresh questions now over backroom deal-making. After the White House has acknowledged another problem with offering a job to somebody else to get out of a race. Apparently, one of Obama's top advisors suggested to a Democratic candidate in the Colorado Senate race that he exit stage left and get a nice administration job in return. So the White House now, over the Joe Sestak situation, you know, the situation in Pennsylvania to get Sestak out of the race so that Arlen Specter could win the Democratic primary for Senate. Sestak said no, and Arlen himself exited stage left. So this is fresh questioning now over another deal in the so-called Obama administration, the one that was going to give us openness and transparency. Former Colorado congressman, state congressman Andrew Romanoff, last night released a copy of an email in which White House Deputy Chief of Staff Jim Messina described 3 federal international jobs that might be dangled to him if he were not challenging Senator Michael Bennet for the Democratic nomination. So here we go again. And it'll be fun to watch White House Press Secretary Gibbs try to duck some of these questions, because the whole idea of offering jobs to get out of races, which is clearly against the law, is now blooming anew. Just when the White House was hoping that it wouldn't. Now, you know why this thing will continue? This issue, it will continue, I think, because we now have Fox News, whereas some years ago when Fox didn't have its powerhouse viewership, these kinds of things could be swept under the rug when a Democrat did it. And inevitably, things like this were swept under the rug, but no more. Fox News, which has the largest audience, cable news, is able to keep things like this at the forefront, and they will do that. Well, we mentioned at the start of the program that the concept of eminent domain and keeping your property, even though the government wants to purchase it for commercial purposes, well, it's happening in New York City. There's a guy by the name of Jake Bono. He owns a business that's been around for 77 years. It actually is a business called Bono Sawdust Supply. They actually sell sawdust for different things. And they're in a rather blighted area of New York City. And New York City wants to purchase the ground there, including the Bono Sawdust Supply property, so that they can build other things that will make it look better, not for government purposes now, but for commercial purposes. And Bono does not want to sell. He says that for 77 years since his grandfather and two uncles founded the company, they've manufactured these sawdust products for industrial uses. So he and 21 others waging a big battle. The city government wants to tear down this area. It's called Willits Point, and they want to build a new development of housing, parks, and recreation facilities. And they want to use eminent domain at this point. They've been trying to negotiate with Bono, apparently for some time. He keeps saying, no, I want to keep the property. Bono says if it was a road or a hospital or something that was needed, we'd say we had had bad luck and we'd not be trying to hold on to what's ours. But that's not what it's for, he says. I think he's going to get a lot of sympathy. Now, about 64% of the property owners around there have reportedly agreed to sell their property, but there's always a couple of holdouts, right? Used to be that eminent domain meant that the government could force you to give up your property only for public construction. Roads, highways, anything that had to do with government construction. Not to turn around and resell it or allow it to be taken over by another commercial venture. Then we had that decision, I believe it was in Connecticut, where the Supreme Court upheld the right of a local government to take control of property and to use it for commercial purposes. To me, it was a shocking ignorance of the Constitution and the whole concept of eminent domain. Anyway, we'll take our next break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the Church of Scientology buying up parts of Tampa. Don't go away.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Eagle Tires. 3816 North Nebraska in Tampa is now open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day. Eagle Tires has used steel radial tires from $20. Eagle Tires new radials are the lowest priced in Tampa Bay, period. If you need tires, save big at Eagle Tires, 3816 North Nebraska in Tampa, open 24 hours a day. Call Eagle Tires at 813-221-7675. Also, visit Eagle Tires' new location in Pinellas County at 3179 East 22nd Avenue in St. Petersburg. Call the Eagle Tire Pinellas location at 727-348-8291. No one beats the prices at Eagle Tires, 3816 North Nebraska in Tampa, and 3179 East 22nd Avenue, St. Pete. Used radials from $20 at both Eagle Tires locations, Tampa and St. Petersburg.
Hey, we're glad you're listening to Freedom Works. And if you like what you're hearing, there's something you can do to help keep us on the air. You can visit our website at thefreedomworks.com and make a contribution, anything from $20 on up, and it'll go directly to our program and our efforts to get out the libertarian message of less government in our lives and more personal freedom and responsibility. And while you're there at the website, you can find out more about libertarianism. You can also take a very short quiz to see where you fit in on the political spectrum. And you can find out more about people that have stood for libertarian principles like Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand. But please consider backing our show with a contribution. We even make it easy for you with a credit or debit card. And once again, that's thefreedomworks.com. And by the way, thanks for listening.
We've got a new show Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Simon Says hits the airwaves. The host, Steve Simon, is a business broker and real estate instructor. He's been a county commissioner and chair of the Tampa Bay Regional Planning Council. Now, if we can just get him off his Harley and into the studio, it should be fun. It won't be boring. Simon Says here on the Tantalk Radio Network. Simon Says is brought to you by the law firm of Lucas Green and Magazine.
Tampa Bay's Tantalk. Entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works. Paul Molloy, along with Big Ed, our sports expert at the controls with me. And I'm reading this story that is every major league umpire's nightmare. Armando Galarraga thought he had a perfect game with two outs in the ninth inning in Detroit. Ground ball, throw to first. Clearly the runner does not beat the throw. You can even see the play here in a picture in the St. Pete Times sports section. And the umpire calls the guy safe, ending the quest for a perfect game with two outs in the ninth inning. Big Ed, there is a lot of call for the commissioner of baseball to step in and actually change the call. Let me ask you, is that feasible, and should it be done, do you think?
I don't think you can change the call the day after, because, you know, if you're going to change that one, how far back are you going to, what about this one, what about that one? The ump did go in and try to apologize to the player, like, yeah, that's really going to do any good now.
Right, but Jim Joyce actually admitted he blew the call.
At least he admitted he was wrong.
Yeah.
I just wonder what took him so long to figure that out. At some point, you know, Major League Baseball has some problems that really scare fans off. I don't think you can go and redo the strike zone or anything like that for replays or anything like that, but stuff like that you can.
Well, you know, it's interesting because there are certain plays where an umpire will go to the replay machine in baseball and change a call. And there are very, very few in baseball. There are actually, obviously, more in football. They actually use replays in hockey. They used one last night in the Stanley Cup, by the way. And they use it in basketball and football. So,
well, yeah, baseball's toying to do with it. You know, first of all, baseball needs so many things, like a new commissioner or an actual commissioner. Having a commissioner that's actually an owner, I think, is way too much of a conflict of interest. But there should be some sort, you know, replay should work the way the NFL does in college. There's a flag. You get a couple of flags a game, a couple of chances per game, because they're worried about slowing the game down. But at some point, you have to get it right. I mean, you know, when it comes down to a pennant race, it comes to one game. It could be, you know, this could be the deciding thing, although it wouldn't have mattered. But still, you know, at some point, there needs to be a system for, say, a catch. I know Carl Crawford had one this year that was an actual catch.
Of the Tampa Bay Rays.
And stuff like that, I think, there needs to be some sort of a challenge system, because the fact that you or I can sit at home and watch this game in HD, and we can see every freckle on a guy's arm, but an official of that sort that may have an actual outcome has no way of seeing technology. You know, the same thing with the NFL. Here's a guy that, you know, we're watching at home with five different TVs on HD and can plainly see it, yet he's got to go on the sideline where it's 150 degrees in the sunlight, put his head under the hood, and try to make the call correct, and the TV's not a good situation. But baseball should have some sort of a replay system. Don't worry about slowing down the game. Just get it right.
Yeah.
If you want to stop slowing down the game, have guys like, I think it's Derek Jeter, that's got to stop between pitchers and redo his gloves and fix himself and all that stuff between every pitch. That's the thing that slows the game down.
I agree with you. I've always said,
you know, get it right.
I agree with that last thing you said, and I think there used to be a rule that they never enforced, which was you had 20 seconds from the point the catcher throws the ball back to you on the mound as a pitcher to deliver the next pitch.
And you know what? That's all superstition. It's all superstition. I've got to rub my right kneecap, pull on my left ear before I get the next pitch, because it's the same. They got to rewrap their gloves every pitch. Come on,
yeah,
come on, boys.
That's the first thing I would do, and I also kind of like the idea of giving maybe a couple of challenges for each manager.
Yeah, but you see, even in the NFL, it's not fair. I mean, if you get the challenge right, you don't lose a timeout, but you lose a challenge. I mean, if you use up all your challenges and at the end of the game it's clear that it was wrong, you don't get to challenge because you are penalized, because once you use the two challenges, you're finished.
Well, I know from a purist's standpoint, you don't use any cameras and you just allow the umpires to make the decisions on the field, and it's part of the game, and you can get upset if they make a mistake and this and that. Obviously, when you have a perfect game and this happens, and, you know, I did a little bit of umpiring way back, and one of the first things I was taught in baseball was that if you're a first base or a base umpire, you don't watch, and I'm watching the photo here of the umpire, you look at the bag, the foot of the baseman, the first baseman in this case, mm-hmm. and you watch the feet of the runner,
mm-hmm.
and you listen for the pop of the ball
right.
into the first baseman's mitt.
Love.
That's how you do it. I'm looking at this picture, and clearly you can see that the umpire is looking at the first baseman catching the ball and not focusing on the first base. And I think right there is where he made his mistake. So that's just a technical thing. But I think it's inevitable these days that with the technology that we have and the entrance into the other sports that baseball is going to have to do.
This is going to be a perfect example for replay. And then they're talking, well, we'll just use it in the playoffs. Come on. We just use it in the playoffs. You know, what's the difference? Use it during the regular season.
Last night, if it wasn't for the playoff cameras, there might have been a bad call on a goal. It was not a goal. You could see it from the overhead shot. Puck was starting to cross the line against the Blackhawk goalie, but he pulled it back just before the entire puck crossed. Perfect example of where you actually made the right call because of it.
As we only have one more minute left, I would say that using the challenge system would also negate Joe Maddon having a guy like that going out and having to argue a call and spending 3 minutes out there arguing. There you go. You would eliminate by having the replay.
We're going to talk about this Church of Scientology and its purchase of Ybor Square on our show tomorrow. We apologize that we didn't get to it today. I want to thank everybody that listened, and you have a great, great Thursday. Freedom Works. We'll be back with you tomorrow.